Now, Israel, the United Emirates and Bahrain have signed a deal in Washington normalizing diplomatic relations. But the preliminary documents contain language that could complicate that deal. For a century, non-Muslims have been allowed to visit an area in Jerusalem known as Haram al-Sharif, which is the site of two major mosques. But only Muslims are allowed to worship there. But could the deal upset that convention? The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem has now banned citizens of the UAE and Bahrain from praying at the site. Dr. Eyal Mehrouz is a Middle East expert at Sydney University. He's been following the developments.
He issued a fatwa, which is a religious Islamic religious edict, forbidding the citizens of both the UAE and Bahrain from coming and praying at Al-Aqsa Mosque, telling their citizens, you won't be able to, at least from our perspective, you won't be able to come and pray in Jerusalem.
How serious a statement is that? How much of a disincentive might it be, if not to the governments of the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, then to the people of those two countries?
Allowing the citizens from the Gulf countries and all over the Arab world to come and pray in Jerusalem is a big thing. I think it's already reviving an existing or an old fatwa that was issued in the past that said that any Arab country that normalizes relationship with Israel will suffer these consequences. So it's not a new thing, but it's certainly a blow.
Do we know whether that ruling applies already, for example, to Jordanians or to Egyptians, the two Arab countries that have diplomatic relations with Israel?
That's a very good point. No, it doesn't. The peace between the countries is not as warm as it was initially, but the Egyptians have been coming to Israel. Jordan has a special status as the custodian of the holy places in Jerusalem that was reaffirmed in 1994 in the peace agreement. So Jordanians are as good as the, you know, the landowners of the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Eyal, you have been reading the fine print of this proposed deal, which was being signed or formalized overnight in Washington between Israel, the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. What does the fine print suggest about the status of Haram al-Sharif, which is the compound that the Israelis know as the Temple Mount? This is the compound that contains two significant mosques. What does the fine print say about this?
I have read the statement issued earlier, and there's an interesting passage there which says that while Muslims will continue to be able to come and pray in Al-Aqsa Mosque, all other faiths or denominations will be able to come and pray in other religious parts of Jerusalem or other religious sites in Jerusalem, which has been pointed to as potentially a change in the status quo which forbids all other faiths to pray on Temple Mount. Because if the limitation on prayers are no longer covering the whole of the Temple Mount, then this is potentially a major change and potentially could lead in the future to major problems between the Islamic world, the Muslim world and Israel.
Yeah, this might just seem like a footnote, but conflicts often start for very small reasons. And we need to point out, at the moment, there is a ban on anyone other than Muslims praying anywhere on Haram al-Sharif. And that is the whole area, the whole compound that is on top of a hill, below which is the Wailing Wall where Jews pray. But this deal could in fact allow other religions, and this would almost certainly only be Jews, to pray, what, in the areas around the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
It is unclear whether Israel is going to go there, but in terms of keeping the option open in the future to assert a greater level of sovereignty than exists now, it is a potentially a risky wording of that statement. We need to see the actual peace accord. They call it a peace accord, even though it's not really a peace accord, because there was never a state of war between the UAE and Israel or Bahrain, and Israel. The Bahrain deal will be called the peace declaration. They're using the word peace, but I think it's normalization would be a better term. But certainly a problematic passage that if transferred also to the peace accord, then could lead sometime in the future to problems, because there's an increasingly pressure by Jews to come in, up to the Temple Mount and pray, which the Palestinians are strongly objecting to, and the Waqf, the trust that is managing and administering the Temple Mount.
And there is a very strong and growing movement in Israel among, well, I think less ultra-Orthodox and more Jewish nationalists. It's called the Temple Movement. And in fact, in the past, it has pushed for the demolition of the Dome of the Rock, which is the smaller of the two mosques in the compound.
Yes, exactly. I guess it used to be a fringe group that pushed for demolishing the Dome of the Rock, and then maybe in the future building the third temple. That was their vision. But in recent years, this movement for Jews to come and pray on Temple Mount has been growing exponentially. The Israeli police is still forbidding that because of fear of backlash and violence, but what used to be a fringe group is now growing, and they have also political affiliations with the government and of Israel and so on, so potentially a problem for the future.
More broadly, Eyal, how significant is formalizing a deal between Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates and Israel, particularly given the United Arab Emirates has been dealing with Israel below the radar, but not that far below the radar, for many years now? Is this as significant as the Trump administration is suggesting?
As I said, it's short of a peace agreement, but I think it is potentially significant. I think that a long-standing all-Arab stance of conditioning peace between Israel or normalization between Israel and the Arab world on Israel returning the occupied territories is being broken by something like that. If more and more countries in the Arab world join what is now for Arab states having some kind of peace or normalization with Israel, this potentially could mean certainly important geostrategic changes in the Middle East, and certainly a problem for the Palestinian cause, for the Palestinian people that at least on paper had the backing of the Arab world until now.
At the other end of that, though, is something that you said earlier, and indeed the BBC has been saying this as well, that diplomatic relations between Israel and Egypt and Jordan have never really been warm. In fact, they've often been quite frosty. And as I recall, diplomatic relations and recognition with Jordan was highly conditional on the ultimate evolution of a Palestinian state. It flows out of the 1994 Oslo Accords. Is there a chance that what the Israelis gain with the United Arab Emirates deal, they could at some point down the track lose with the Jordanians if a Palestinian state never comes about?
I think to a great extent, at least in terms of the Arab states' governments, the Palestinian cause has never been a very significant part of any kind of deal. There's a lot of lip service because of the Arab street that is a lot more pro-Palestinians than the governments are. Both the Egyptian peace treaty in 79 and the Jordanian peace treaty in 94 initially started off as warm peace. I worked in Egypt for 5 years, I should know, many years ago. But gradually that changed into a cold peace. I don't think the Jordanians will prioritize the Palestinian issue over their own national interests. I think all countries today in the Middle East are prioritizing their national interests, and the Palestinian people are really suffering these days.
Eyal Meirouz of the Government Department at the University of Sydney. He's also a former Israeli intelligence officer. And this is the Religion and Ethics Report.